Hello everybody, welcome to another edition of the AfriCast. My name is Brendan Lutz, and joining me in studio today is Robin Chetty.
Hey, how's it going?
And it's just him and I, because Clinton is writing an exam today.
Yeah, best of luck.
Good luck to you, Clinton. Right, so before we get into the meat of the podcast today, let's just touch on a bit of news. Robin, you have something about Disney Plus, I believe.
Yeah, so the streaming service from Disney essentially is launching in a few countries this month.
Yeah.
Some early adopters got access to it in the US this week and have been trying it out. So in the coming weeks, the US and Canada are receiving it, as well as Australia and New Zealand. And then the latest bit of news, I guess, out of Disney is that four more countries are getting it in March 2020.
Is one of them South Africa?
No. Yeah, as is normally the case with these kinds of streaming platforms, South Africa is not
on the list. We're not on the list at all. Let's just be frank. We're not on the list at this point.
Yeah, those lucky enough to make it onto the list are the UK, France, Italy, Germany, and Spain.
So a lot of people are going to say, I'll just use a VPN. But some services actually require that you use a credit card from that country. So, for instance, I know with F1 TV Pro, you can use a VPN to access the front page of it. But the moment they ask you to pay the subscription, it's like, oh, sorry, this is not a credit card from this country. So I wonder if Disney will do the same thing. I'm sure they will, because they like money. And
well, they did actually specify that availability of content will differ depending on the region, which seemed a little odd for them to say, purely for the fact that most of those countries are in the EU.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess we're going to see what will happen next year. I guess the most important thing for us is, when is it going to be available locally?
Yeah.
South Africa has been a country where a lot of the Marvel movies have previewed here first before any other country in the world. So you would think that there's a market for this kind of streaming platform, but I guess we'll see.
I hope so. I mean, last week Apple released Apple TV Plus here in South Africa, and I'm very disappointed with that. I think there's a total of like 9 pieces of content, which includes series and movies, that you can stream, which is a bit...
Is that compared to, I'm guessing the US has a lot more.
Yeah, there's one or two more shows on the US version, but a lot of it is also stuff that's forthcoming. There's not a lot of stuff that you can watch right now, except for The Morning Show, C, and the other stuff that doesn't star Jason Momoa or Jennifer Aniston. I mean, it's all right.
Yeah, all I know is that 2020, there are going to be a lot of streaming platforms for you to have to sign up for.
It's worrying, because I don't know how many I'm going to sign up for. It's already like all these game streaming services. I'm going, I'm going to cancel this one and this one because I ain't using them. But yeah.
Yeah, I think perhaps with Star Wars and Marvel, I'm guessing all the Disney properties that they have should be a bit more, I guess.
Tempting.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, and then speaking of streaming stuff, this is not related in any way whatsoever, maybe a little bit. Eskom has implemented load shedding on Thursday night at 10 o'clock. They made the announcement at, I think it was just after 8 p.m., which was very nice to learn that your power would be going out from between 10 and 5, depending on your schedule. Sorry?
Hopefully you've made supper by then.
Hopefully. I had actually just finished cooking when I got this alert, so that was very nice. Load shedding then ran from 10 o'clock last night until 5 o'clock on Friday morning. And this morning, Eskom has said that there is a high risk of load shedding for Friday afternoon. That's a bit unfortunate. They lost 3 generating units, which meant that they had to use reserves to keep up with demand in the country yesterday, and last night they just had to implement load shedding. So on Friday we might see load shedding, we might not. They could be implementing it as we record this podcast. But yeah, check your schedules. There'll be links to checking your schedule online or where to check your schedule. And yeah, let's get into something a bit more fun. Robin, you played a walking simulator.
Yeah, I played.
That's mean. I'm just joking. I just want to posit that I am joking. I'm not saying it is a walking simulator, because from everything that I've seen, I actually am quite intrigued by Death Stranding.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people are. I mean, it's almost been, 2 years?
Yeah.
Since we first saw a naked Norman Reedus
on a beach with a baby.
Yeah, so immediately my interest was piqued. And the trailers kind of following that over the past 2 years have also been quite cryptic, quite mysterious. Mm. So I guess there's a whole lot of mystique surrounding the game.
Yeah.
We were lucky enough to get the chance to actually play it ahead of release, which is actually today, the 8th of November. Mm. And our review went up last week. And
Can we just talk about how crazy the embargo for this game was? Like, yeah, you couldn't disclose anything. I think you could disclose that you had the game and that was it.
Yeah, and I think even that, there were some issues around that for local media as well. So I'm going to try and keep spoilers as far as possible.
Okay.
Yeah, just kind of touch on, I guess, the prologue and maybe the first three chapters of the actual game. So I think from the outset, it's important to state that this was not what I was expecting. And there also needs to be something said about hype.
Mm.
I think a lot of games these days get overhyped and really struggle to live up to that. I think, in my experience at least, probably the only game that really lived up to the hype and perhaps even exceeded my expectations was God of War.
Yeah.
In recent memory.
Absolutely. So, I would agree with you there.
Yeah, so I think people that are perhaps overhyping Death Stranding and perhaps are too enamored with the cult of Hideo Kojima, the creator of the game. They might not necessarily get what they were expecting. So enough about, I guess, kind of expectations and anticipation, all those good things. The actual game itself is really, really intriguing in terms of the story.
Okay.
I feel like it's quite similar to Control.
Yeah.
It was released earlier this year. And in a lot of ways, like Mortal Kombat 11, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Purely from a narrative and storytelling perspective. The story that's been told by Kojima is amazing.
Okay.
The cutscenes in particular are like quite trippy in a lot of ways. And for all intents and purposes, you could actually put together all those cutscenes and make it into a movie.
Okay.
I know that one of the easier modes, or the easiest mode, I think, is designed in such a way that there's very little action in gameplay and more focus on the story, and you kind of just enjoy the story for what it is. So from that perspective, the storytelling perspective, this game is amazing. But unfortunately, that's only one part of it.
Yeah, it has to be a game as well.
Yeah, so here we talk about the fact that Death Stranding takes a long time to get to the action, or what you're hoping is the action. The first kind of few chapters, you're obviously playing as Norman Reedus' character of Sam Bridges.
Mm.
He's in this post-apocalyptic world, which reminds me, well, at least the environments remind me almost of some kind of Nordic country.
Yeah.
There are lots of black rocks, lush green fields and stuff
Mountains.
Like that.
Mountains.
Yeah, so the actual environment itself is beautiful.
Mm.
And the designers here have done a really great job in terms of rendering an environment that looks quite immersive and is worthwhile exploring. But if you're wanting to actually get through this campaign, those kind of elements kind of get pushed aside, and you need to actually, a lot of your time is, like you mentioned, spent walking.
Walking, yeah.
So for people that are hoping that it's kind of a bit similar to, I guess, the Metal Gear Solid kind of franchises in terms of action shift from the get-go, they're not going to get this here. I would say that things start ramping up quite nicely from about the halfway mark in terms of the campaign. So if you are patient,
you get rewarded.
Yeah, you get rewarded in the end because, like I said, the story is amazing. Is really interesting. It's beautifully laid out for you in the cutscenes, and obviously Kojima has done a lot of has put a lot of thought in terms of the story he wants to tell and kind of the commentary he's making on society, connections with other human beings and those kind of things. And that kind of plays into some of the gameplay. One of the trailers that they released prior to the game being launched touched on what Sam's mission is in the game, which is to connect these underground cities in America via something called the Chiral Network.
Okay.
And that's, for all intents and purposes, a kind of energy that's surrounding everything as a result of the Death Stranding event.
Okay.
And here, unfortunately, I can't get into the actual elements of it.
Okay, because it's spoiler territory.
Yeah, so essentially what you'll be doing for large chunks of the game is traveling from one city to another, which are referred to as knots. And these cities are essentially underground bunkers. So people have now, I guess, cordoned themselves off from the rest of the world. as a result of the Death Stranding event. And there's a thing that we've seen in the trailers called Timefall.
Yeah.
Which is obviously a form of precipitation that really leads to like rapid aging.
Okay.
And as a result of the Death Stranding event, some people are affected by it, some aren't. Sam, for example, has a few interesting abilities. One of the threats in the game, referred to as BTs, kind of those floating figures.
Yeah.
That you see, they kind of drag you down into this, like almost like mud.
Okay.
And drag you down to your death. He's able to sense them, but he's not able to see them. He's able to see them with the help of his bridge baby, the little pot
baby
that sits on his chest.
That is still the creepiest thing in the world.
Well, the kind of backstory behind Bridge Baby, it's also is a little bit disturbing, but I don't want to get into that because it might upset some people.
All right, let's let it run for a while, and then we can talk about the nitty gritty.
Yeah. So in terms of the gameplay, you're not going to get an. I wouldn't term it as an action adventure game.
Mm.
I feel like the point of this game is to explore.
Yeah.
So a lot of time you're walking around, you're working as a courier and essentially taking packages from one place to another and trying to ensure that that package gets safely delivered. A lot of the mechanics are focused on balancing. It plays a really crucial part just in terms of like how much cargo you're able to carry around.
Yeah, I saw that. I wanted to actually ask about that because I saw in some reviews that I've seen this week since Friday last week, like people changing how much you can carry. And I want to know how big a part of that is or how big a part of the game that is.
It's like, as big as you want it to be. So... for specific missions, Sam might have to courier specific objects. And along the way, you can pick up other parcels that might have been discarded and take them to their final delivery
points. All right.
So you can load up more and more stuff. And that obviously has an effect in terms of how quickly you can walk, whether you can run or not, how good your balance is. And those all kind of elements you have to keep... an eye on as you're kind of traversing these lands.
So just for instance, right, I'm just going to spitball something here. So if you are on a mission that it's like you know that you can get through without much hassle, you would, for instance, take more packages with you and carry – and like what happens – okay, what I really want to ask is what happens when you die? Do all those packages then disappear or can you go back and get them?
So –
is this a spoiler?
This is a spoiler.
Okay, I mean, well then let's not discuss it then, rather.
I think we can discuss it just in terms of what Hideo Kojima has kind of mentioned prior to the game being released. He spoke a lot about when you die in Death Stranding.
You die in real life.
The way you get back, I guess, to the real world, for lack of a better term, is a really interesting kind of way. So you don't... there's been a lot of mention about like the sea and it being ocean and like drowning.
Yeah.
And those kind of elements play out when you are dying and also play a part when you are essentially resurrected.
Interesting though. I mean, like, just that line alone is very interesting to me. Did you ever play World of Warcraft?
Yeah.
Like, so when you die, you become this spirit person, you must travel back to your body. Is it a similar sort of idea?
Very similar.
All right.
So think about, again, this kind of feeds into the idea of strands.
Yeah.
So I think they refer to the German origin of the word.
Yeah.
Not just being a beach, but rather things that tether items together. So there's that kind of element. So there are a lot of layers to the game.
Damn, this is interesting.
Yeah. So again, the problem is that because there isn't a lot of action happening in the first few chapters, you almost kind of start to lose interest because there's not, I guess, a balance in terms of what the action is happening in the story. For me, that kind of element was missing. And in a lot of ways, it kind of marks down the game, in my opinion.
I mean, so I've played a fair amount of walking simulators in my life because I actually quite enjoy them. A lot of times, there's a lot of thought that's put in into the story that's trying to be told, and I find them quite interesting. So for me, this whole thing of like, oh, the first half of the game doesn't have much action, to me that's pretty awesome because I can sit down at my PlayStation and play through the first bit of the game paying attention to the story and just chilling, essentially. Like, it sounds really interesting to me, but I mean, I think that's something that's come out this week, is that everybody that's played it has a very different opinion of the game.
Yeah, I think it might be a symptom of being a reviewer.
Yeah.
That you have to get through the game as quickly as possible so you can get your view out as quickly as possible. So perhaps those kind of opening chapters where you're kind of exploring and walking and trying to get a feel. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's a pain, but it's kind of it's something that you need to try and just rush through in order to get to the real meat and bones of what's going
on. And as a reviewer, that sucks because it means that you can't take your time and enjoy it and go into it because, you know, I know even when I'm reviewing a game, it's like, okay, I got to get through this as quickly as possible because you want to be out at a relevant time. So, I mean, it's very interesting. Like, yeah, it sounds very fascinating to me.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't say that this is perhaps Kojima's best work. I'm still a big fan of kind of the earlier Metal Gear Solid stuff that he did. But I think there's a lot of interesting elements that he's kind of worked in here. And I think, especially from a storytelling perspective, it's perhaps one of the better titles I've seen this year and perhaps in recent years.
So what I really want to know is, do you think he would have been able to make this game while he was still working for Konami?
Well, no, purely for the fact that his, I guess, full attention is on Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah.
And I guess there is a little bit of Metal Gear Solid to the game just in terms of the mechanics. You can see the movements. They had that kind of snake-esque feel to it.
Okay.
That said, the combat is far different. Instead of, say, the kind of close quarters combat system that was part of Metal Gear Solid, here Sam is trying to evade. He's not a fighter.
He doesn't want to be in a fight.
Yeah. Even some of the boss battles, it's more about evading and looking for an opportune moment to strike as opposed to kind of, you know.
So Dark Souls. kidding.
No, it's definitely not as brutal as Dark Souls.
So what is your final verdict for Death Stranding?
Yeah, I gave the game an 8 out of 10.
Yeah. Which I think is fair. It's pretty much in the ballpark of where most people are reviewing it. That's like enjoy the latter half of the game at least.
Yeah, I think if you are patient, if you enjoy a great story, there's a lot of layers for Death Stranding for you to get into. I think if you're looking for an action adventure game, this probably isn't going to be for you. That said,
and that's fine.
Yeah,
I mean that's fine.
That said, I think it's much like Control, although that had a very heavy action element to it. I think that this is the kind of game for people that want a bit deeper kind of experience to kind of what they're playing, not just kind of point and shoot kind of stuff.
Awesome. So Death Stranding is out today, the 8th of November, exclusive to PlayStation 4.
Yes.
I've heard words that there's going to be a PC version, but I don't know if that's confirmed at this stage, but PlayStation 4. I would say I am very interested, and I might actually go and pick this up today. Like, I'm very interested to play this, especially because the last game that Kojima worked on, that I really enjoyed was PT, Silent Hill's playable trailer, which I really, really enjoyed. So yeah, I'm keen to see this and just see how the weird and wonderful mind of Kojima works. The last thing I want to ask you is, what is the soundtrack for this like?
Soundtrack is great. Essentially, when you're walking around, then the soundtrack kind of kicks in, and it's very like slow and melodic. And a lot of the times, like Sam will start talking to himself because he's alone.
Yeah,
except for his little BB. He's alone and he kind of talks to himself. He's like, you know, come on, Sam, you can do this. You know,
that's awesome, actually.
Every now and then he looks back at the camera. Well, I'm assuming he's not looking back to look at
the camera,
at any kind of enemies that might be nearby. There's a little hint of like kind of fourth wall breaking that happens every now and then in the game, which is quite nice. So I think take your time with this game.
Yeah.
Kind of put your expectations to the side and let this kind of get engrossed with the story because that's where it really shines.
Awesome. Fantastic. So that's Death Stranding, the latest from Hideo Kojima. If it sounds interesting, check it out. If it doesn't sound interesting, maybe wait for a sale or for 5 years for it to come to PS Plus. We're going to move on. Yesterday, Google held its first Google for South Africa event in South Africa, here in Johannesburg. They host these events all around the world. The latest one in Africa happened in Nigeria, and then they've held this one now this week, which was really interesting. It was really nice to see a lot of big names at Google here in South Africa. We met I think he's the director for Google South Africa. He's a wonderful, wonderful gentleman. I'm just trying to remember his name now. It is. I need to check this. Where is he? His name is Nitin Gajria. He's the Google for Google Sub-Saharan Africa. He reminds me a lot of Sundar. I'm not just saying that because he's Indian. Like, these mannerisms, the way he talks. Like, he's a very passionate guy. Very, very cool. But then, enough about the Google bigwigs. Let's talk about what they launched. So the first thing that they announced was a reading app called Bolo. It is an app that is designed to improve the reading of primary school learners. It's an app you download, and the idea is that your child reads out aloud, and then the app helps it. So, or your child, not it. So, for instance, you could be reading a sentence, and you get stuck on a word. So, on stage, they showed off a gentleman reading, and he stumbled at the word giraffe, which was funny for the crowd. But it was intended to show how the app works. And within a couple of seconds, because the person wasn't reading, the app went, giraffe. G-I-R-A-F-F-E, and then giraffe, so that the kid could learn the word. And then it gives you, like, positive reinforcement once you finish the sentence. Good job, or whatever it may be. So it's really, really cool. So what can happen is if a child is like, then it'll be like, what is that word? And then it helps you and helps you read. So it's really, really nice. It's 100% free. There are free books that you can go and read right now. And then Google is working with the Global Book Alliance to bring more books to Bolo. Specifically for Africa, they're working with African Storybook and Book Dash to bring more African stories to Bolo, which I think is really, really awesome. I do want to mention that at the moment it's only for English. But it does work completely offline. So you download the app and it appears, although I cannot confirm this, I did ask Google, but they didn't have anybody too technical during our Q&A session. I did ask them whether it was the same as the Google AI that they use for the Google Assistant. Mm. It seems like it, but it seems like a much more pared-down version that doesn't need an internet connection. It's just on device.
When you speak about devices, I'm assuming tablets would be the best.
Well, I mean, it works on anything. It works on anything that's Android. It's actually primed for Android Go. Which is the kind of lower spec version of Android designed to run on low memory devices, mm-hmm. which is really cool. It's 100% free. You can go and download it right now. There is no iOS app at the moment. This is a Google product, so it is exclusive to Android.
Did they mention about partnering with any kind of local schools and stuff like that?
So in terms of partnering with education, they are in talks with the Department of Basic Education. There's nothing to report on there just yet, just that they are having talks with them. So in a couple of years, this might actually be a way for, like, your grade one or maybe even pre-primary kids to get a head start on reading. It's 100% free. It was originally launched in India. Bolo is actually Hindi for to say, I believe, which is a really, really great little app. There was an activation point at the event where you could go and see it in action. And it works really well. It doesn't stumble. It's not like sometimes when you say those magic words to summon your Google Assistant, sometimes it doesn't pick it up. This seems to work really, really well. And there's no advertising, nothing. So if your kid is struggling to read, Bolo is a free application that can help them.
Yeah, that sounds really good because, I guess in my former life teaching, when you had children in like a remedial class and they struggled, you kind of had to sit down with one-on-one in a system. It sounds really good, especially for parents who have kids and they're not able to afford, say, having a teacher that can actually sit down with them one-on-one.
And then what's also nice is that the app will generate report cards. So it will tell you, like, here's what your reading level is, here's where you can improve. And then there's also sort of like game features. So there's achievements that you can unlock that you can like inspire you to progress, and it's all being gamified very nicely. There's your own personal assistant. Her name is Dia, who helps you along, and apparently she's smart enough to be able to converse with the child and tell them some jokes, which is really cool. I mean, it's a really interesting little application, and like the fact that it's 100% free and tackles literacy in the country, I think that's really awesome. But the big announcement from Google for South Africa was the launch of Google Station. So Google Station is a Wi-Fi, free Wi-Fi initiative that Google has been developing, and they've launched it in the Western Cape. They've launched it in Langa, Khayelitsha, Gugulethu, Delft, Elsies River, Philippi, and a bunch of others.
Sounds like the Google for South Africa event should have been held in Cape Town.
Yeah, it really does, right? I mean, it was everything was for Cape Town. So essentially what this is they are Wi-Fi, public Wi-Fi hotspots that you can log into, and you can use them forever if you want. Google did tell us that there is a 30-minute limit where you will, after 30 minutes, get logged out, but then you can just log back in again, and there's no limit to how many times you can do that. I think that's kind of a way just to keep IP addresses renewed, and so that people don't hog the thing, and you know, so that you aren't downloading the next season of Suits or whatever it is.
Well, that was watch. My first question. Kind of, what are the limitations in terms of what people can and cannot do?
There is no limit. All right. Google has outright said it's completely unlimited. People can use it for whatever they want.
Did they mention speeds or anything like that?
They didn't mention speeds. Although I imagine, like in a situation like this, you're not going to get like 100 megabit per second.
Well, then I don't want
right?
it.
Right. I mean, this is so okay. So, why free Wi-Fi? And Google showed a really nice clip of why bringing Wi-Fi to these places is a really important thing. So, people can go and get interview, or find jobs online, get interviews, get interview tips. People can start a business online. Like, one of the things that they found was that everybody that they spoke to was like, if you had the internet, what would you do? And the first word that came out of teens' mouths was, I want to start a business. And online gives them the way to do that. So this specific project in the Western Cape has been conducted with help from a company called Think Wi-Fi, mm-hmm. who will provide the Wi-Fi access to the townships. And Google has said that they are going to work with other companies in other areas. I mean, that's not to say that Think is off the table now completely.
Yeah.
It's just that if they, for instance, up here in Joburg, find another company that can help them, there is a rumor that it will be Sonic Communications. That's not confirmed at the moment. It is just a rumor. I think this is a really, really great little thing. So this event was announced in August. We got the save the date for this event. Mm-hmm. And it has I have been speculating about what this could be for since then. And this whole project has been kept secret for 2 months. Right, they put up the Google stations, sans branding or anything. It was just like, oh, here's a Wi-Fi hotspot. We're just testing it out, see if it works. And now it's something that's permanently going to be in those locations. Nitin didn't say anything about where they're going to go to next. They are in talks with a couple of places, but there's no hard or fast, we're going here next. They do plan on launching more Google stations throughout the country. However, don't think that you're going to get one outside your house in Sanson. The main goal is to reach underserved areas,
sure, yeah.
places where there is either limited internet access or no internet access whatsoever. And a lot of those places are townships where people have been underrepresented for years. So, yeah, it's a really nice initiative. It's really great to see. And I hope that it grows from strength to strength. The one thing that I am hoping for is that Google announces that it is going to become an ISP. Now, they've said that they don't want to become an ISP. They've said that that's off the table completely.
Mm-hmm.
But we've seen in places like the US where they had like Google Fiber. Now, if Google could do something like that, it would be fantastic. And there is another piece of news that was kind of glossed over. Google is building its own subsea cable that will connect Cape Town to Lagos to Europe. It's reportedly the biggest underground or undersea cable for Africa in terms of capacity, not just length or whatever. And that makes me it sets my mind going, worrying at 100 Ks an hour. I mean, one of the things they said is that it's for the benefit of the entire African continent. They're not going to like keep it to themselves. They will let other ISPs make use of it, which makes sense. It's a point of presence. It's another entry into the country, like the WAX cable or one of the others. So that would be really interesting. But I think that's what Google seems to get right is they're not just coming here and saying, okay, well, this product worked in the US, let's bring it here. I mean, I actually did an interview with their head of product inclusion, Annie Jean-Baptiste, about how Google builds products for everybody and tries to get it right. Like, they don't get it right all the time. Sometimes they just build stuff that doesn't work for everybody, which makes sense, but they try and account for everything. And I think that it's kind of testament to what this Google for South Africa event was. It wasn't just Google showing, hey, we're a big US company that's coming here in South Africa. They're making really big investments into South Africa through Google Impact Challenge, through the trading of SMEs and startups and entrepreneurs. Like, they are making very big investments into not just South Africa, but the African continent at large, like places like Kenya, Nigeria. Like, they are making, they are coming here and saying, well, you know, this is, we want to be successful here, but in order for us to be successful, the people need to be successful,
yeah.
Which makes sense. I mean, you have, the more people Google has online, the more people it can serve ads to. I know that sounds really like, bring me more ads, but it's the truth of the matter, right? Google wants to make more money. Only way you do that is by giving people access. And I think that as a service provider, Google kind of understands where people are at. Like, especially this Wi-Fi initiative, like free Wi-Fi is something that any one of our ISPs could have already done, right? Or our mobile network operators could have done. Like, anybody could have done it at this point, but Google did it, right? And I know you can say to me, oh, well, you know, they got to think of their bottom line and they got to think, but Google also did it, right? Google is arguably one of the biggest companies in the world. And sure, that may give them the liquid to do it, but they're a US company. Why should they have to solve our African problems? It's just, it gave me a little bit of hope looking at this, or looking at this event yesterday. It was like, this company is willing to just go the extra mile. Like, they are working with community leaders. They are working with local government. They are working with users in Africa to make their services better. Like, Android Go was developed because of countries like, or continents like Africa, where there's not much internet connectivity. People can't afford premium smartphones, but they still want to be included. So I think it's very interesting, and I'm keen to see what Google has planned for the future. As for like stuff like the hardware, there's no plans to bring Google hardware to South Africa just yet.
We spoke to
Asha Patel. I'll have an interview with her up shortly. I spoke to her and said, well, you know, people want Google hardware. I mean, I don't know if it's everybody, but I saw that Pixel 4 and I'm like, yeah, I want one. But unfortunately, they're not going to be bringing any hardware to the country yet. So that was the key, yet. So there might be plans, but as of right now, I wouldn't bet on it.
Well, I'm assuming there's got to be a kind of feasibility assessment. Kind of see what,
yeah, absolutely. That also, like Google Stadia, I think would also get the same response, not yet. The truth of the matter is that we just don't have the internet connectivity to handle something like Stadia at the moment, which is fine. You know, I'm less perturbed about that and more concerned with what Google is, and that's getting the next billion people online. And yeah, it seems to be making massive inroads in that direction, and I'm happy to see what Google is doing. So yeah, that's what Google announced. Oh, they also just reiterated that they are working with DigiCloud in terms of their presence here in South Africa. And if you have any needs with regards to Google Cloud services, you can get in touch with them. And that's really it. I also saw the Ndlovu Youth Choir perform, which was awesome. They don't need music. I'm just saying that. They don't need music. They can just sing. But yeah, so that's Google for South Africa, the first one. We hope that there's another one next year. I'll put all the links to all the news from there at the bottom of this post, as per usual.
Sounds good.
Cool. So that's going to be it from us this week. Next week, it will just be Clinton and myself again, because Robin, you are going to China.
Yeah, Lenovo Tech World. I'll have a few stories from there, and yeah.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. Right, folks, that's going to do it from us, from myself, Brendan Lotz. Cheerio from Robin Chetty.
Cheers.
We'll see you next week.